Joining me now, host of Leafs Lunch, it is Julia Teixeira joining the show. Julia, thanks so much for taking time.
How's it going, Matt? Anytime, dude.
I'm doing well. I'm up at girlfriend's cottage, and we build our own. And by build, we just shut.
Oh, I saw it. It's gorgeous.
Yeah. Yeah, we got the ice rink going. My girlfriend, I could see her outside, and she's skating as I'm slaving over a hot mic here. So I am doing well, and I imagine you're doing well that you had a game today. Like, I was going to start with this. How squirrely do you get when there's, like, 3 days off between games?
Oh, my gosh. It's hilarious you'd bring this up, because Al's brother and I have been talking about this the past 2 days. Like, if the Leafs go 4 days without a game, I start to sound like SpongeBob. You know the SpongeBob episode where he lacks water? He's like, water. That's what I feel like. I hate when the Leafs don't play. And it's been forever since they've played at home, it feels like. Like, I haven't been to a Leafs game in a bajillion years. And I'll actually be at Scotiabank tonight. And I've never actually been in the building when there's no one in it. So I'm curious about how that experience will be. Yeah.
That's gonna probably feel surreal. I mean, parking is easier. Not that I don't know if you're driving.
Totally.
And then going through the concourse, simple. I doubt there's many food and drink options. I'd be curious. I'm gonna be listening tomorrow just about what does that feel like being in this giant empty building.
Yeah, I'm curious to know too. I've never been in that scenario, especially since we're so up high in the media gondola. Yeah. Like, it's already weird to be all the way up there. Never mind to be all the way up there and have nobody else fill in the gap between. So I'm curious to know how that goes down. But I'm jacked up that the Leafs are finally back at home.
Wait a minute. Can you sneak down? Can you get into like row two? Can you get the platinum seats? There's no one there.
Oh, I'll be trying. I'm for sure going to pull some antics for TSN's TikTok tonight, so be on the lookout for that, too.
Okay, yeah, absolutely should be. By the way, next time there's 4 days off, you got to do just, like, Leaf anagrams. You know, just take Ilya Mikheyev and try to create new words. I think that would be a ratings
win. Oh, that's good. That's a good one. I got to write that down. That's a good idea, Cos.
Yeah. So I think, to me, the most fascinating thing is I will often make jokes about coming up next, what's going on with the Leafs' third line? And, you know, because everyone gets so obsessed with the Leafs, we obsess about sometimes the minutia. But tonight is really different. Like, I am wildly curious to see what does a Nylander-led line look like? And Kerfoot's had a good year, and Kampf at center. Like, I mean, I know this is the experiment line blender night, but I'm generally fascinated to see what that looks like.
Yeah, I think that's the one people have kind of circled as just a line that's really interesting. We had James Myrtle on in the noon hour on Leafs Lunch, and he was talking a lot about how interesting this line is, mostly because it's a combination that we've never seen before. And I'm also looking forward to seeing Tavares and Marner back together. I like the way that duo clicks. Tavares has been a little bit quiet lately, so I feel like this might have something to do with getting him going. And then Mikheyev on the wing, like, that guy just flies, so he'll just bring the intensity up on that line a little bit. The first line we've all been loving lately with Matthews, Bunting, and Kasha, but you're right about that third line. And Myrtle's perspective on it when I was talking to him today on the show was that it might be a situation, because Sheldon Keefe has really made it clear in the media that this is not a demotion for William Nylander to the third line, and in fact, it's to help out the third line. So it might be a scenario where the second and third line are both kind of like the second line, because he doesn't want William Nylander's ice time to suffer either. So it'll be interesting to see, and I'm sure Sheldon Keefe is so good with being reactive on the bench with if something's not working, he's not afraid to tinker with it. So it'll be interesting to see how Nylander's ice time is affected by this move, because I have a feeling that this second line and this third line is just going to be, it's just going to kind of be a crapshoot in terms of what the second line actually is. It's kind of like a 1A and 1B, or I guess 2B and 2A scenario with these two lines.
Yeah, and it's just, I mean, it's one of these things where you're going to have to keep a close eye on your TV or you live about who's jumping over the boards.
Yeah, that's actually hard. I find it easier. Sometimes I find it easier to digest games when I've got Gord Miller and Ray Ferraro holding my hand through the duration of Bonesy or whoever I'm listening to. And I can't also pause in person, which is very difficult. I hate when I can't say, Austin, can you just do that over again? I just want to make sure I saw that right.
I want a TikTok video. Sorry to interrupt, of you just yelling, pause. Pause. I was like, can you score that again? I want to see what happened on the forecheck.
Yeah, that's honestly a good idea. And there's so much space. When we were in the World Juniors it wasn't a bubble, that whole debacle in Red Deer. Hilariously enough, I was able to hear, the building wasn't at full capacity, I was at the very bottom, close to the ice, and I was able to hear Craig Button from all the way up at the top of the rink. So I feel like if I yell loud enough in an empty barn, they'll definitely hear me.
God, I want that to happen. I also wonder, and last question just about this, the theme of the line shuffle, is I wonder if last year the Canadians, the Philip Deneau line, helping to doing a big job of shutting down Matthews and Marner, where they just combined for one goal. I wonder if that's any of this. So like, okay, we've seen in the playoffs, I throw all the talent on one line and it can get shut down. Well, if they're all separated, then that would mitigate that. I wonder if that played any part in this desire to experiment.
You know, I see a lot of similarities between this team and between the Tampa Bay Lightning team that's just won two Stanley Cups back-to-back. And something notable about that Tampa team is that they don't have, like, Boston's perfection line. You know what I mean? They don't have that one, like, killer line that's just loaded with everyone on it. They have a very balanced lineup, and that's what made them so dangerous the past couple of seasons. Like, the third line was eating everybody in the playoffs. And maybe that's the approach, that's a good point, that's the approach that Sheldon Keefe is trying to take here, because if maybe Matthews is all tied up with the top matchup in the first line, then Tavares can come into play, and then you've got a huge threat with Kerfoot, Kampf, and Nylander still deep in the lineup on the third line, and then Engvall, Spezza, and Simmons doesn't sound like a bad fourth-line combination either. So that's a great point, and I think that has a lot to do with it, balancing the lineup so that every single unit could be a threat to the other team.
Yeah. And we're going to find out tonight. And by the way, the other side to all this, Julia, is talking about you guys getting squirrely. That's not going to happen in about a week from now, where it feels like from about early February to mid-April, it's kind of almost a game every other day with the rare 2 days off.
Oh, gosh, I'm excited for that. I know it's like, it's not going to be much fun for the players. You're going to have some of those guys in oxygen tanks, and obviously, you know what's going to be really interesting about that second half of the season, though, when things get really condensed? We've been talking a lot about, obviously, Jack Campbell's numbers have come back down to the earth as of late, but he'll have another chance to kind of get back to his groove tonight. It was nice to see Peter Mrazek have a good game on Saturday. I think the organization really needed that. He really needed that. So maybe we'll see. And the estimate that James Myrtle gave on our show was like 40% of the starts going forward. That's going to be the thing. So as much fun as me and Al's brother are going to be having with games every second night, we'll have so much to talk about and we'll be having so much fun. The workload between goaltenders, I think, is the thing that most people will end up paying the most attention to, because Jack Campbell obviously had a crazy November, came back to earth a little bit here in December and January, and like, Peter Mrazek is a proven NHL goalie. Like, he's played big games, he's been in important scenarios, and I think the more that they can incorporate him into games, the better it'll be for the organization. I think that's the one place with this condensed schedule that the Leafs are kind of looking at and thinking, okay, is this little tandem situation that we planned on earlier in the season going to work out? Because I think that's what they have to revert to now. They can't just roll with Jack Campbell, who's just not used to the workload.
Well, they didn't give him the 3 years and they're close to $12 million.
Exactly.
For it to, you know, like, it's supposed to be 1A, 1B, and it's fine if Mrazek is B, but it can't be like back in the day when Brodeur would be playing like 64 games a year. They're not going to be able to survive like that.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you can't have a guy making $3.8 million sitting on your bench all season, especially when you have to negotiate a deal for Campbell. Because maybe Mrazek starting to step up will affect how that deal gets done this summer, too, or whenever the Campbell deal gets done. So it is important for the team, for sure.
By the way, speaking of deals, I know you guys were talking about Chris Johnston and the Leafs and the fact that they'd be open and getting a player with term. And kind of the same theme as what happened last year, how much does it impact the thinking this year? The Foligno situation with all the draft capital and you got basically nothing out of it. I wonder how much that's going to spook Kyle Dubas and the management team to not go after rentals this year.
Yeah, I get that for the Leafs, especially with how many contracts have to get done this summer. I just mentioned Jack Campbell. McKayev's another one. There's a whole bunch of guys that are going to need to sign new deals this summer, so I can't imagine bringing someone in who they'll need to re-up this summer would be very attractive to the Leafs. I don't know. I kind of feel bad. Dubas gets a real black mark on his name for the Foligno situation, and I kind of feel for him.
No black mark. By the way, no black mark here.
Yeah,
There was an injury, and they most of the time, when you go grab a free agent, it doesn't usually work out. And there's been far more successes with the Muzzins and the Jack Campbells of the world. I'm just thinking, I just wonder if does that impact it at all? Or do they just, you know, go full goldfish and have no memory?
I can't decide. I think for sure that we'll see something get done here. And it'll be interesting to see what goes the other way. I remember earlier in the season the name that was bounced around on insider trading. And that's when Muzzin and Hull were really, really struggling at the beginning of the season. They both look a little bit better now. But I remember Dermott and Hull being the two names that were kind of in question to go the other way. I don't know. I don't see. It's hard to say. I don't want to say like empty the closet right now because not the attractive answer. But something's going to have to go the other way, and the Leafs do need more help on the blue line. Like we saw what it looked like without Muzzin and Hall in the lineup, and Muzzin just hasn't been to the same standard that he's been in the past. So I think they will need to do something on the blue line. I think they definitely will. Kyle Dubas is a really aggressive GM. He usually gets his deals done before the deadline even happens. So it'll be interesting to see how that shakes down. I've been seeing the names bounce around. I don't know which one is the most attractive to me, but I'm very interested to see which one lands in a blue jersey.
Hey, to me, the number one thing when it comes to defense, I'm looking less at who's not here and more if Muzzin, because if Muzzin can get back to being 85, 90% of what he was last year, that makes Hull better, that makes the second line strong, and it means you're putting less pressure on the Sandins, Dermots, and Liljegrens of the world. Before I let you go, I got to ask you this, because you were talking about, you know, the Keith Yandle, the record, the Ironman record. Scale of 1 to 10 on the Debbie Downer scale. Scale 1 to 10. When I throw out the Keith Yandle record, it's impressive. But how impressive is it really if Phil Kessel is close to breaking it? How much of a Debbie Downer am I for even just floating that idea?
Listen, I like Phil Kessel a lot. He is a great character in Toronto. He's a great character for the game. Yep. I don't know. Like, it's still pretty impressive. Think about how Phil Kessel plays hockey. Like, Phil Kessel doesn't put himself in very high danger scenarios.
Oh,
like,
no. If anybody's That's how gonna, I would play.
You know what I mean? Honestly, same.
Yeah.
So, it is still really impressive. Like, we had Shane Doan on Leafs Lunch Day, and he was talking a little bit about Yandle and his character and just, like, what kind of guy he is. It is so difficult. Like, I know the Overdrive guys were really ragging on Keith Yandle on this record. Like, check out their maximum games played in a season. Like, it is so difficult to play so many NHL games, especially in a row. Like, it's a game where, like, people get hurt. Like, every single day someone gets hurt. Every single day you're left with, like, some hit that makes you cringe. To play in that many games in a row without one thing keeping you out of the lineup, especially the COVID pandemic. Like, how did the guy not miss any games, like, just with a scare or with a false positive? Like, it is wildly impressive. It's not a Debbie Downer to me. If Kessel breaks it, it might suck the wind out of it just a little bit. But like,
Thank you. It
works for me somehow because he plays the game in a way that ensures his longevity, is how I'll put it in the kindest of terms.
By the way, I think you're lying about you would be more the Kessel style. From everything I've heard, you weren't afraid, you know, to mix it up. You see, I'm a coward. You know, I'm the guy that would play like Phil. I'm like,
fair enough.
No. I'll be here in the open ice if you want to get me the puck. Otherwise, I'm just going to go back to the bench and take a break.
You know, I am a bit of an angry elf on the ice, so
yeah,
it's true.
Yeah. There's no way you're setting the Ironman record. Julia, always appreciate, love listening to your guys' show. I enjoyed Shane Doan apologizing for a minute for being late.
Oh, my gosh, it's so funny.
Yes, it's so Canadian of them. Julia, take care. All the best. We'll be listening tomorrow, and I can't wait for your report of being in the giant empty arena. Dress a little warmer, and I'm not telling you anything you don't already know, but when there's no humans there, that place is a lot colder.
You actually just did. I'll remember that. Thank you so much.
No worries. No worries. Least I can do. You took the time to join the show. All the best, Julia.
Thank you.